So, last year, for those of you who are here, you know that what we dealt with was the methodology of PSOC, methodological issues from the vantage point of POSCIM. Right? We started at the beginning, we started with the building blocks of PSOC, the role of authority, the role of MNUG, the role of independent analysis of SIGYOS, how POSCIM deal with reality. We moved to different times when there's tension with halacha, when science that halacha is based on is contradicted by modern science. We dealt with the tensions of halacha and Kabbalah. We moved to psikat halacha v'sharat chak, and all the types of things that push psak in different directions. And then we did some test cases, which we continued a little bit in Elul. But now we're starting anew. So, at the request of some people from America who join us virtually, that's what it is. So I think what I thought we'd do this year is, I want to stick with the methodology of PSOC, but what I want to do this year is I want to deal with issues from the vantage point of non-POSCIM. Right? Last year what we dealt with was, imagine yourself as a POSEC, right? What factors go into your decision? But there's the opposite perspective, which is, okay, let's assume you're not a POSEC. Right? So what is your role in the halakhic system? Just to start off, today what we're going to do is a survey of different models of PSOC to see different places where the role of the laity, of Balabatim, of non-POSCIM, is in PSOC. But after this, I have some ideas of topics that we need to cover, but I'm open to what people want to do. We'll see the direction it takes. For the next few weeks, right, just to give you an idea of the type of things we'll be covering. So next week, at Ellie's request, Ellie Weber, we'll be dealing with the very basics of a Seila Harav, right, of why one would have a Rebbe / Posek, which will be less halachic in nature, more of a survey of different positions, some halachic issues. The week after that, we'll deal with the authority of Marda Asra and how one defines a Marda Asra b'zman hazeh. Right, the complications of Marda Asra b'zman hazeh when most people do not define themselves by their geographic community as much as their ideological community, and the implications of that in PSOC, and obviously the enhanced role of the Baal HaBayit in picking it. Right, if you're assuming there is a role of the Marda Asra, which we'll get to, and your PSOC is defined locally where you live, how does that change? Right, when we live in a globalized world, and also obviously if it changes and you can choose your POSEC based on ideology, right? That obviously gives the individual a lot of much greater role, even if we assume, which we'll get to, that, let's say, a Baal HaBayit can't poskin himself at all, right? He can choose who to ask, which does implicitly give him a very large role in how his halachic world will be shaped. We'll move from there to Chacham Echad Sha'azer, Chacham Echad Sha'hitir, which we dealt with briefly last year, which asks the question of why is PSOC binding? Or is it binding? When is it binding? What does it mean for it to be binding? Then we'll deal with the questions of when can you paskin for yourself, which will be two shiurim. One on when are you qualified to paskin? What does it mean to be qualified in terms of, right, what knowledge do you need? What skills do you need? And when is it usher for you to paskin? Again, a topic we touched on last year. We'll come back to it. But here, this year, we'll also deal with the issue of nogeya in PSOC, right? Even if you are qualified to paskin, let's say, are there reasons why you wouldn't be able to paskin for yourself anyways because of reasons of bias, right? We will deal with Das Torah, right? The extent of PSOC and what issues are fundamentally left out of the outside the realm of PSOC. Yair, we will this year actually systematically deal with Chumrah.
Sometimes at the end of the list.
What? Maybe we'll change the order. We'll see, okay? These are not, we will try to deal systematically with Chumrah. Cases when people can innovate their own religion, right? Why is it binding, right? When is it binding? When is it encouraged? How does halacha view it, etc.? Those are the things right off the bat that we have to cover, right? I have it somewhere, a list of other things that I wrote that we should cover. But big gadol, right? The next few weeks, I think I really want I want to spell out the basic questions, right? So from my vantage point, what I just said are really the ABCs, right? Figuring out, right, under what circumstances can people who are not normally poskin paskin, when they can't paskin, and then what is their role in the system, how do they choose poskin, Where do the poskim get the authority from? To what extent can I control which posek I turn to? When do I have to listen to the posek? Under what circumstances, parameters, etc., right? So I want to deal with the fundamental questions. After that, we'll see where we go. I have some ideas, but I want to hear from you. What I want to do today is do a survey of different models of psak. For people who were here last year or came a little bit in L, you'll see that almost all the tshuvas that I put here to model different perspectives on psak you've seen before, because I've dealt with them. That was on purpose. And then at the end, if we have time, right after, you know, sort of we outline these different models, I want to hear more feedback as we, you know, think about topics and what directions we should take. But, you know, we will be fluid and we will continue to change things as people want. Right? Last year, I think, right, I had an idea of what I wanted to do for most, but I think we had a decent number of shiurim that either responded to controversy in the Jewish community that happened to be happening at that time. Right, we dealt with you at some point. After that became that exploded for no apparent reason, and then we did partnership in Yana, and we did what? Briefly in our summary, I think we did. Okay. What? Okay. Could be Baruch Hashem. As a
new scandal.
There's a new scandal every day. Let's not.
Let's.
Okay. No. 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 Okay. Fine. Okay. Remember that this shiur is recorded, and yes, people on the other side can hear you. I at least did get one person asking who I was talking to at some point. Oh yeah. I mean, to be fair, this happens to me from people who are listening to Smicha Shiurim in YU, where they are like, oh, you asked the question. There was somebody getting agitated in the back of the room. I think it was you. I'm like, oh.
Actually, though, I was listening to one of your recordings, and like, it was hard to hear them.
You can't usually hear the questions.
So, yeah. Maybe
yeah. Okay, maybe we'll do that. Okay.
If they're important.
Good. So, if they're important. Yeah, okay. Good. Fine. So, but today is going to be more of an introduction to give you an idea of where of the problem of what we're dealing with. Then we talk about, because like, this is a lot more amorphous than it was last year. And hopefully, we will deal with right. We'll develop something more robust, a robust theory of the role of Baal HaBatim Psak. We will see at the end that this is, you know, we're sort of answering the call from Judah and Shana. You know Judah and Shana, yes, Rabbi Dr. Judah Goldberg and Yoetzet Shana, or if you want to add titles, right? But they have a joint article in the Orthodox Forum, which we'll get to, where they do outline some of these issues very nicely. Okay, so if I ask you, what is the role of a posek, right? What does it mean to right when someone asks a shayla, right, and a posek answers, right? What is he doing? So I think there are at least five different models that we can talk about, and you know, if I missed one, please let me know. The first one, which is the one that people tend to identify with Haredi Psak, but we'll see in a moment, this is not at all true. I mean, it is true, but not exclusively in any direction, is the view that Posek is Machria Sofi, right? He is the final decision, right? He basically paskins by fiat. Right, you are bound to what he says. He views himself as the authority. You have no input. You ask the question because you don't know. He's the expert, and that's all there is to it. You know, I just gave an example in the first source because we saw this last year. You find this often, for example, in tshuvas by Rav Vosner. Not all tshuvas by Rav Vosner, but some tshuvas by Rav Vosner, especially those which he calls the tshuvot tsarot, right? His short questions, in which he's acting as right. He's basically pausing my fiat. You look, for example, right? The first question. These are really somewhat at random, but I collected them from last year just to show the people who are continuing from last year, right? How this is really the natural continuation of what we did. He says, right? This is tshuvos about Bali tshuva. So he says, right, Sheila, and you see how short this tshuva is. He says, Mao geder tinok shenishba bizmanu. Right, how do we define a tinok shenishba in our time, right? What types of non-religious Jews are defined as a tinok shenishba? Right, this is a very, very heated issue. The first posek to suggest that non-religious Jews bizman hazeh, because they believe in a different ideology, And actually think they're doing the right thing and still have certain emunas who are correct, are considered a tinuk shenishba, which is halachically considered a shogeg based on the Gemara and Shabbos was. Come on, people. Last year. This was our, we gave it. Was Rav Yaakov Edlinger in the Tshuvas Binyan Siyon HaChadashos Simen Chav Gimel, right? Adopted almost immediately in Germany. It's also evident in the Tshuvas Muhammad. The Hawel of Javis Vyabin Chelik Avat Tshuvah Chav Tes. It is founder of Moshe Tshuvas, it's founder of Rav Uvadia, etc. But as we looked last year in the Tshuva by Rav Yaakov Edlinger, right? He tries to explain his position, defend his position. If you look at Rav Bosner, he says, Tshuva, Tinok Shen Nolad, Mehorim Mumrim, a child who's born from parents who are, right, whatever, Mumar Kofar, whatever, Vahaya Anu is Gomer Shal Kiva Lavo Mitzvos, and it's not his fault. Ein Yeradesim Kufnun Tero, Yeradesim Jin Rem, Vachin Komish Galbis Vishal Goyim, Obis Vishal Perke, all Torah, or in anyone who grows up amongst, in a non-Jewish environment, or amongst people who reject the Torah, Vayideze, Lo Shama, Vekiba, Mataras Mitzvah, Vemunasa, right? All those people are Tinuk Shen Nishba. That's it. Right? He doesn't explain, he doesn't go through Dion, right? He was asked a question, he answered, and that's it. And second one also, and he says, right, can you, right, again, I picked these shilas also, because these are shilas you would expect a Dion, right? They're very heated questions. Like the first one, who is defined as a Tinuk Shen Nishba? How do you relate to non-religious Jews, B'zman HaZeh? And he gives a three-line answer. The next question is, can you use physical force to prevent someone from doing an Isser? Also, relatively controversial. His answer, four lines. B'vadai mutter l'shtamesh b'koach l'hafish m'Isser. You can beat somebody to prevent him from violating Isser. You can use force, right? V'ayin mishna b'ru ha'shar ha'tziyun. V'ayin tzos ha'choshin nesivas ha'mishpat. M'shovul nesivas choshin mishra l'hafish m'Isser. Kol adam yachol ha'got ha'filein ha'bezdin. It's beferish in the nesivas. You're allowed to hit somebody to prevent him from violating an Isser, even though it's not invested. Now, you wouldn't know this from the Shaila. If you read the Shaila, you read, Ayin Tzos HaChoshes Nesivas HaMishpat U'Mishovish Nesivas Choshen Mishpat Simen Gimel. So, right? And then he said, and you're allowed to hit somebody, to render him from doing an Isser. What would you conclude about the Tzos and the Nesivas? How do they each paskin?
That you can.
If you look at the Tzos and Nesivas, what do you discover?
You
can't. It is a machlokes between the Tzos and the Nesivas, and then he is paskining, but he didn't tell you that. Right, he gave you the short answer and just told you, by the way, that's where I'm getting it from. And he's telling you that it's in Machlokas and he's poskening, but he didn't tell you that. It just, if you look it up, that's what you see. V'makin belosa say, Achadei say, Navsho by Allah, you can, right, can you hit him until he is on the verge of death or actually dies? Shal Yavar Kamoba say, I am in a Shovi Sham Shita Lay de Ain Mach, and he says that you can. Okay, Uba Flok, Subos Shita Lay de Gambelosa say, Kofan Achadei say, Navsho, but that flos says you can. Vachronim her Richu Baza. Right, that is the entirety of the tshuva. Now, this is often true in Rav Vosner, right? If we want to, right? Not always true in Rav Vosner, but Rav Vosner, as an example of a posek, is someone you read the tshuvos and you get the feeling that the way he views the halachic system, there's the gadol, there's the posek, and there's you, right? You ask the question, he gives the answer, and that's it, right? In a very striking tshuva about women going to gynecologists, after he sets up his rules, he closes the tshuva with the aseres hadibros of Hilchos Halicha Lerofe, or something like that. Right? And then he just sets out his rules. Right? The notion of using the rhetoric of, right, what I am writing is the Aseres HaDibros, right, obviously creates a very, very, right, a very specific view of the relationship between a posek and the person asking the question, which is basically no input whatsoever. Okay? Now, I'm not claiming Rosner does all the time, right? But this is definitely one model of psak, which is often found in parts of the Haredi world. But I will make now two caveats, and this is a point I want to, you know, highlight as we go through the year, is that for everything there's an exception, and for everything you think is bad under one circumstance is good in a different circumstance, is called for sometimes, and it's not always true. Right? If I wanted to, you know, some people like to think about the difference between Haredi Judaism and Monorthodox Judaism, or at least one of them, is the emphasis on autonomy versus the emphasis on lack of autonomy, of authority, right? Which is not 100% true. But then they assume, right, autonomy is positive and authority is negative, etc., etc. But that's not really true, right? For every time that authority hinders autonomy when autonomy should be encouraged, there are times when authority, right, fiat, right, really just straight authority is a very beneficial thing to have. To skip just for a moment, right? This is something we looked at 2 weeks ago, right? Another example of, this fiat psak, but where even though it is using the same methodology, it's actually completely different. This is from Ma'amar Yira Torah. We talked about it a few weeks ago. This is the a kuntris in the Haredi world about OCD. And they write here, Yadanu ma'od harbe minei navaran, nirvin, or I know that people with OCD, fine. Next paragraph. Od yadanu teva hasvuchim v'mochze. I know that people who are, have this challenge of OCD, she akshenutam gdola velo yashidu libam ledvarim uketamid heim hayechidim shetzodkim mivinim yoter min gdola yador. We know that the nature of OCD is that people don't listen to other people and they always think they know best, right? Even more than the gadol hador. And that's just what OCD does, right? People are totally convinced of their position, they're caught in it, and they can't get at it. Oshachoshvim sheish lahem yirat shamayim yoter meyam, or they think they fear God more than the gedolim. Umimela kasher lahem l'smocha divrayhem. And therefore, it's hard for them to rely on them. Afra lefumayu, right? You should stick dirt in their mouths, fine. But we know from experience, but this has caused them a lot of problems. Until it gets so bad that they realize that they have to get out of it. And a wise person will see what he's supposed to do. We already said in the Torah, you have to listen to everything that they say. Even if left is right or right is left. And this is a biblical commandment. Because of Achinuch mitzvah tzav tzadiyeh. In Lo Tasser is not just the Sanhedrin Agadol Yoshev Yerushalayim, but is the continuing generations of leaders. And anyone who doesn't listen, Mivatel Asay Ze, he, right, negates this positive mitzvah of on show gadol, and his punishment is great. Zeu ha'amud ha'chazak shatar nishenet bo, yadu ha'davar l'chol mi sheyesh bo dat ad kan dvarav. Now, what happens here? Right, in this piece, again, right, what is the perspective of posek to shoel? Again, it's
final.
Right, final. But what's the very big difference? Right, well, in the first case, if you had asked me, I said it might have been helpful if, in a very controversial case, the posek might have bothered explaining himself, right, not posking by fiat. Here, right, they recognize that pastorally, right, psychologically, the best thing they could possibly do is posking
by fiat.
Right, fiat. Because if someone has OCD and under certain circumstances, the worst thing that you can do is explain to them or give them a say. The way to help them, what?
What's fiat?
Fiat is like command, right? Like, you know. That the worst thing you can do is give them an explanation, is give them autonomy, right? What you need to do is break, right? I think one of the books, if I remember correctly, on OCD is called Brainlock, right? Is right? People are trapped in themselves. The only way to do it is to really break, right? Break their own control of their mind, right? Or their lack of control, right? They're being controlled by OCD. So, on the one hand, yes, there is this model, which under certain circumstances is, it feels almost a little bit empty, right? You're talking about complicated questions, and maybe you want an explanation, maybe you want input. There are other times, though, like in this case of OCD, where really the best thing is to say, you know what? You don't have a choice. This is the answer. And there, now, these are obviously extremes, right? But there could be cases in the middle, right? There could be people, right? You could definitely imagine that for certain people, especially people who are not that educated, right? If, a rabbi started telling them, right, it's mutter because it's, basic kosher shayla, right? Someone who's not so learned but very yarei shamayim. If you start telling them, well, it's batel, and basar b'chalav is only waiting between basar b'chalav is only a minag, and start saying things like that, right? They'll totally freak out. If you just tell them it's mutter, they'll be fine. Right, so there are times where even not in these extreme cases, where we can imagine that actually we would right, even intuitively encourage sort of this authority model of psak. A third example I want to give, and this is one I spent a lot of time on last year, just to prove that it doesn't just exist in the Haredi world, is from the Rav. Right, the Rav, one of his most famous positions was that women are allowed to learn Gemara. And many people have read the letter in which he said that's the case. Yes, my mouth, thank you. But as we noted last year, in fact, there are two letters, right? It's a back and forth, back and forth. And if you watch what the Rav does, right, I'm not going to get into all the implications of this, but just watch what happens, right? So the person asked him, the question from Rabbi Rosenfeld, is it desirable to teach the oral law to girls? Is it permitted to teach the oral law to girls? Is there a halachic difference between Talmud, Mishnah, Agadah, and halacha psuka? Is there a halachic difference between surface study and in-depth study? So the Rav answered, dear Rabbi Rosenfeld, I acknowledge receipt of your letter in my answer to your previous inquiry concerning the permissibility of instruction of girls in Talmud. I stressed that unless I am assured in advance by the school administration that my recommendations will be followed, I would not take the trouble to investigate the matter, right? First things first, the Rav said, I won't answer unless, this is not advice, this is psak. I don't want to hear it, right? If you tell me you're going to listen to me, I'll answer. You're going to tell me you can take it as advice? I don't want it, right? Since such an official assurance has been withheld, your letter did not contain any such commitment, I must decline to consider the controversial problem, right? The Rav is not even willing to discuss it until he gets the assurance that his psak will not be questioned. The reason for my reluctance to engage in this controversial issue is the unique stand taken by many of our Jews on matters of law and tradition. We have reached a stage at which party lines and political ideologies influence our halachic thinking to the extent that people cannot rise above partisan issue to the level of halacha objectivity. Some are in a perennial quest for liberalization of the law and its subordination to the majority opinion of the political legislative body, while others would like to see the halacha fossilized and completely shut out of life. I am not inclined to give any of these factions an opportunity for nonsensical debates. Sincerely yours, Joseph Soloveitchik. So, the Rav is about to issue a, right, Ipsak, right, no questions, and as we'll see in a moment, he doesn't even explain himself. But why, right, what's the role here of paskening without,
so there's no controversy,
right, or in other words, right, let's, sharper, to free the school of the controversy, right, meaning, if, right, what's the effect of his decision is that any criticism will come back to him. Right? I mean, by doing this, in fact, he frees them. Right? Because it's not always true that by limiting somebody's autonomy, quote-unquote, that you constrain them. Right? Sometimes it's actually very freeing. Right? What you're saying is, look, if you took my opinion, and then you went to Moshe Feinstein, and then you went to Ron Cutler, and you decided to pick me, so then they would say, well, how did you pick the Rav? You know, you were the one making the decision. If instead the Rav says, no, I'm making the decision until you tell me that I'm posketing and that's it, I won't answer. And what he's essentially doing is he's ensuring that what he says becomes policy, and he protects the people he's poskening for, right? And then he continues, right now, he says, Ray Rosenfeld, I'm terribly sorry if my letter outlining the question was not as clear as I thought. The matter was thoroughly discussed in committee as well in the entire board. I was moved, adopted, and so recorded in the minutes that we shall be bound by your decision on the matter. There is thus a binding commitment on our part that this is halacha l'maaseh, not just drush v'kabal schar. I therefore hope that since this condition has now been fulfilled, that you will favor us with your responsum. So Ray Rosenfeld told the Rav, that's what I'm giving you. This is psak. We will listen to whatever you say. And he says, dear Rabbi Rosenfeld, please accept my apologies for not answering your letter sooner. The delay was due to my overcredited schedule. As to your question with regard to the curriculum, I'm in a coeducational school. I expressed my opinion to you long ago. That would be a very regrettable oversight on our part if we were to arrange separate Hebrew courses for girls. Not only is the teaching of Torah Shabbat Pep to girls permissible, but is nowadays an absolute imperative. This policy of discrimination between the sexes as to subject matter and method of instruction, which is still advocated by certain groups within our Orthodox community, has contributed greatly to the deterioration and downfall of traditional Judaism. Boys and girls alike should be introduced to the inner halls of Torah Shebaal Peh. I hope to prepare into the near future a halachic brief on the same problem, which will exhaust the various aspects of the same. In the meantime, I heartily endorse a uniform program for the entire student body. Now, what is notable about the tshuva? Well, too, right, there are no makaros here, and he never wrote the second part of it, right? So this, in its very classic sense, is psak by fiat, right? There's no explanation, there's nothing. There's a minor sociological explanation, but he doesn't give a halachic explanation.
But that is his explanation.
Well, we don't know that, right? He claims he had halachic explanation, but that wasn't important, right? Meaning, he's definitely misaber ha'ozen, right? He's explaining them sociologically, the direction he's taking, but he doesn't explain halachically, right? He doesn't bring them into his halachic decision making, right? In terms of the halachic question, right? He's completely opaque, right? There is no disclosure. The Rav doesn't tell, right? Now, correct. There are poskim who take this and transform it into a halachic argument, right? There are poskim who say, right, you know, they combine this with the Rambam said rov nashim, and it's called daitan kala, right? Daitan kalos, and really they are involved in higher learning, right? That's, for example, what you'll find if you look in the tshuvos of the Aseh L'Charav, right? Racham David Levi, Chelik Beis, Tshuvah Nun Beis. That's what you'll find, right? But there he's at least, right, he's making the connection, right? The halachic argumentation is at least explicit, right? Here, it's totally and completely opaque, right? The Rav is, put it, right, there's a cloud between you and the Rav, right? You don't know the halachic argumentation he's making, right? So, here's three different examples of tshuvot, which paskin, where the relationship between the person asking the question and the posek, right, is, the person asking the question has no role in the halachic process. But you read the three tshuvos, and the feeling you get in each of them is totally different. In one case, the fact that I see your hand, Ruben. You can put it down. You don't have to stretch your hand. In general, right, we have, you know, it's numbered, so you know that each section, I'll stop, okay? So, in the first one, right, you wonder why, right here, it's a very controversial issue, and the posuk is not bringing into his mind, and it feels like, right, you're left out. If you're someone who values autonomy in the halachic system, right, there is none in that first one. He references you to tshuvos, to makaros that you think prove his point, and they in fact don't, right? He's telling you there's a machlokas, not even telling you that he's paskening, right? It's as if this is what everybody says, right? He's paskening, this is the halacha. You think it's because, oh yeah, the ktos and the sivos both agree, and in fact, no, it's a machlokas, ktos and the sivos. Right, in the last one, right, the posek doing that is in fact totally freeing the person, because what the person needs to hear psychologically is that he doesn't have a right to make decisions. Because when he does, right, people with OCD will find explanations by poskening by fiat, so to speak. You're freeing the person from himself. Right here, the best way to enable the person to have autonomy is to take it away in this decision. Right, in the Rav's case, right, the Rav is using this lack of autonomy, so to speak, right, his imposition of his will to protect the people asking the question from outside criticism. Right, he becomes the target of their criticism, and no longer Maimonides. Right, that's essentially what happened. Right, so the first model of psak is one where really the shoal has absolutely no say in the question, but right. That can have good, bad implications. It can have multiple effects on how the person asking the question. There could be many reasons why psak would be issued in that way, and it's not always the same, and it's not always bad, it's not always good, right? Yesh ladan. But that's model one, Reuven.
It sounds like from the last decade, you can almost choose which theory of psak you get based on the situation.
Correct.
But
as Matthew Critz said last year, Matthew, if you're listening, hi. Right at the conclusion of pretty much any shir, the conclusion is it depends on the situation. It's complicated. The conclusion is there is no conclusion. Right, that is always going to be true in psak. Welcome. Right, sorry. Right.
No, but how is this?
In Rav Aaron at some point, right, has in one of his articles, right, what type of Jew gives a monosyllabic answer to a question? Right, not the type of Jew I know. Right, that's the right.
It's totally different from Rav Osner. It seems like that he thinks that is how psak works.
Well, no, I was unfair. I gave you his tshuvot that are tshuvot psarot. I didn't give you his long tshuvot where he explains himself.
What's the pressure for him to give those short answers?
I agree with you that I think Rav Osner probably takes this model much more often, right? And that is probably, you know, how Rav Osner more views this system. That's my guess from having read through Rav Osner, right? From parts of Rav Osner, right? I mean, Rav Osner, you know, does not hesitate to poskin in ways like this, to poskin on sociological things, right? To say women aren't allowed to drive, for example, because, and that's why there are car accidents in Israel, right? He says things like that, right? That's the first Tshuvah Chelek Dalet, right? He does have a very robust position of what, right, poskin can say and be authorities on. I agree with you. I'm a little bit unfair because I picked the Tshuva Ksarot. I'm not trying to say that Rav Eisner is always like this. He's not. Right? I'm just giving an example. Right? Also, the Rav is not always like this. Right? Right? I'm saying I could have picked another one with the Rav where the Rav is not like this at all, where he is totally obvious about what he's doing, or he says, I'm not paskening.
That's a definite point. Like,
correct.
There's a difference between that you think that the
I didn't make any claims yet. Ruben, I didn't make any claims yet. This is why this is a survey. I want you to see the problems. I want you to see the issues that we're raising, and starting next week we're actually going to deal with them. That's why I'm doing a survey with things that you recognize, and that's why I picked the Rav case where he paskened by fiat, just to annoy you, right? Just to recognize that this is that this exists. Okay, model two is a posek views himself not as paskening, right? Final decision, but has been matziach a derech, as suggesting a derech in the sugya, but with a catch. Who's he talking to? You can read off my title here, section two, other poskim. Right? That's sometimes the role of a posek. Right? A posek is not talking to the balabatim. He's not talking to the laity, but he does recognize that he's not the final authority. So his job is to write an opinion, to provide an analysis of the sugya that other people who are qualified can make the decision. Right? This, for example, is how Rav Moshe, at least in theory, describes the total goal of all the entire chelek, the entire now 9 volumes of Igros Moshe. And this is the introduction. Right? Why do I paskin? After I've, with a lot of energy, gone through the question, I wrote him, for people who want to know my opinion, whenever I'm answering a question, I'm just teaching you halacha. You look into it yourself. I'm not actually paskining. Therefore, I decided to print my tshuvos. And now the key lines. So that every Talmud Chacham and Posek can read my tshuvos and make a decision for himself. And when he sees that I'm not paskening blindly, I analyze this myself, and therefore I want everyone to check, investigate, analyze whether I'm right, and then paskin. And he'll help people paskin. So Moshe says systematically, how does he view his role as a posek? Not as a final posek, but right, he views the dialogue in Pesach, one second, as being between poskim and other poskim, right? Poskim among themselves don't poskim by fiat, right? They don't poskim blindly, but, right, there's no indication that the, right, one strata lower, shall we speak, the non-poskim have any say in this process. It's clear the other poskim, other rabbis, he's totally fine with that, right? People often forget this about Rav Moshe, right? You know, classically, for example, Rav Moshe on Eruv, Rav Moshe poskim, that you cannot have an Eruv in Manhattan or Brooklyn. He wrote a kol kore. He signed on a kol kore with Rav Aaron Kotler and other poskim that said you're not allowed to build an eruv in Manhattan. So everyone says, "Oh, it must be that Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that no one has the right to build an eruv, even if they think differently." It's not true. Rav Moshe and Chelo Dalet of Arachayim Tshuva Pei Ted, I believe, right, says that while I think this is true and I signed in the kol kore, every other posek has the right to say this. This is also recorded in the journal Hapardes. I think it's. What was it? I think it's volume 31. If I remember correctly, it's volume 31, number 7, page 13. Mashu Kaze.
Which line is
paragraph? I believe it's the left side in the second paragraph in the non-bolded font because it was quoted by someone else, and therefore, I think, if I remember correctly.
You can just say anything.
Now you can go. Now you can go look it up. Now go look it up and see whether I'm telling the truth. I think I am, but something like that. Okay. So Moshe, but really, he believed that, right? He saw that, right? The process of Pesach is a dialogue amongst poskim, and no poskim poses as well in other poskim, but there's no indication that it goes a level down. This you'll find, for example, also in the Ramah. Right, this people remember this from last year when we did the shiur on Shasar Chak, and no, this is the shiur on Hefsim Merub, I believe. So this is from the Ramah's Hakdamah Toras Chatas. Sorry, it's very small, but whatever. V'nei et natzel atzmi b'dvar achad shel yechashdeni ma'ayin. Let me explain something so you don't suspect me of being dishonest here, right? Or being a bad posse. V'hi. Sometimes I say you're allowed to be meikil in a case of great loss. Or for kavod Shabbos. Why did I say that? Because I really think it's mutter. Rak. But the achronim were machmir, and therefore I said, look, in general you should be machmir, because why not? But if there's any compelling reason to be meikil, be meikil. Right? Paskin like the ikar adin. Because of Mari Mintz b'tshuvosa, the ani kolimos echol, v'ashir bar v'shavosa shavenheim. Mari Min said, look, and Ani in general, or everybody in Erev Shabbos, they're equivalent. So then why do I tell them Kavod Shabbos? Why do I tell them Ani, Mishum Hesed, right? Because that's what we do. That's how we explain ourselves to them, right? Zemibnei Kavod Shabbos, Kadeshul Yitmehu. So the people listening to me will not be shocked. Will not reject what I have to say. So let me oser from him matir, because sometimes I say it's oser and sometimes it's matir. And I try to explain to them that really I think it's mutter. But with if there's no counter pressure, because the achronim are machmir, I'm machmir, even though I don't really think it's true, right? They would just reject me. So I come up with these quasi halachic sounding reasons, which are not real. Right? Kavod Shabbos is not actually a category. It's just another way of saying hefsid. It's another way of saying shasat chak. Right? But whatever, people will... I'm not going to explain myself. Someone comes to me and says, Erev Shabbos. Okay, so you want to call it Hefsid, you want to call it Mutter Mikra Din, you want to call it whatever you want. Really, really, it's Mutter, but I don't want to tell them that. So I just tell them, it's Mutter Mishum Kavod Shabbos. Right? But what's clear, by the way that Rama frames it. Again, who does he think is reading this Sefer? Poskim. Because he's... giving away, right? He's putting all his cards on the table. He's saying, I'm lying to you, right? You don't say that to the people who are asking the shaylas, right? You don't say, by the way, I really mean it's mutter, and I made up a halachic category, right, to convince you that it's not so bad that I'm being mekil, right? You don't do that if you think your audience is a hamonam. Just give me 1 second, right? Again, I see your hand. Very good. I'm good. Okay? Right, so again, right, the second model of psak, right, is where posts can view themselves as part of a dialogue, right, where they're not imposing their authority, but... the halachic, sort of, the rabbinic establishment is imposing its will, right, on, right, the laity, right, they don't have a say, but the posik himself doesn't view himself as the final authority, but he does view poskim writ large as the authority and not, in any way, right, the laity. Yeah?
Can you not read Rav Moshe's basic, not, he knows who he is, right? So if he says, like when he says, oh, look into what I say and see if it's right, is he not?
Of course, Rav Moshe is saying this with a little bit of knowledge that he is now publishing several volumes of Igros Moshe because everyone asks him and he understands who he is. I'm not saying that in practice Rav Moshe didn't realize that people were going to take his authority more seriously than they would other people's. That's not what I mean, right? It's clear that there's a hierarchy. Right, that there's the Gadol Hador and there's other poskim, and right, we will try to get, we might get into some of these nuances, though a lot of it I dealt with last year. Right, you can I forget what we called that shir. What did we call that shir? It was the last year before Chazara, something on authority, something. Right, different levels of authority in Psa. You're totally correct. Right, but the dialogue is still right. He thinks this whole dialogue is happening within the halach, right, amongst poskim. Yeah, of course, I don't think he would say the random shul rabbi should just say, ah, I'm a rabbi, he's a rabbi, right? But on the other hand, he really did think that other people were not bound to his psak, right? You know, he probably would have allowed Rav Schechter to build the Eruv in Washington Heights if Rav Schechter thought it's mucha, which he does. Right? And that's what happened. Okay.
Varying degrees of authority in general and the age of the responsible projects.
There you go. Thank you. Okay. So that's model two. Model three. Now this is where we start getting more to our issue. But sometimes Poskim don't do what I just said. Sometimes Poskim really do see the conversation they're having is not between themselves and other Poskim, or not Poskining down, so to speak, to the Hamonam, but they view themselves as mere guides, and they bring the laity into their decision-making process. One of my favorite examples, this is, I believe, the first one that I didn't touch at all last year, is Ishut in the Torah Lishma. Torah Lishma is... There's a pseudonymous Tshuva Sefer written by the Ben Ishchai. Tshuva Shin Samach Dalet. Be'ez ofanim mutar l'shaker. When are you allowed to lie? So he said, She'ela. The question is, Matsinu be'inyan ha'sheker shulchan ramot. Lying is a bad thing. Very bad. V'hu me'arba kitot. It's one of the four people who don't see Shechina. He's being very terse here, but that's the Gemara in Sota Daf Mem Beis. Matsinu shenasevo. But sometimes it's mutter. Shamru Chazal mutter l'shanu v'nei darchi shalom. You're allowed to change, right? You're allowed to lie v'nei darchi shalom. Right? Yevam otzach samachem at base. V'chin matzina b'gmar d'metzia. Daf chof gimel. Shamru b'hani klas milei avdi rabban and the mishani gibedibu rayu. And we said this in Bava Metzia as well. That there are three types of things talmidei chachamim lie about. M'mesech the purayu v'shpuzaya. We won't get into what that means, but something about his learning, something about his intimate life, and something about guests, but again, each of these is machlokas. Because v'atosas sham bush v'zaya had lo chashiv hachad demut l'shan min darkei shalom. The reason this is not under the category of mishan darkei shalom, that means the yavamot of samachay mishum dahani nami mishum darkei shalom hein regilim yosher ma'achirim, because they're just more common lachinakad hani, and therefore you reference these separately. And there are a lot of things you could say you should be able to lie about for Darkei Shalom. Therefore, Yagid Lanu Moreno, so this was the question. Tell us, so tell us where we're allowed to lie. What are the parameters? So he says, Tshuva. I'm not going to tell you and then he goes on and he lists every single time in all of Shas and Poskim when someone provides a heter to lie, right, and lists them and says at the end, and I hope this helped you and now you can figure it out for yourself. You can read the Tshuva, it's fascinating. But, right, here's yet a third model. And here, for the first time, we see the Posek, right, how does he view his role? His role is not to paskin, right?
Halacha Moshe Sinai.
His role is not, at least in this Tshuva, to even speak with Poskim. Who's he talking to?
You,
whoever asked the question. What does he say? I'm not going to decide for you. You have a right in the halachic process to make your own decisions. My goal is to educate, right? To educate, to help guide, but you make your own decision, right? So that's possibility three. And here already we see that the role of the balabayit, shall we say, is actually in the halachic process itself, right? Now, model four. Here again, we're going to see a role where the balabayit is involved, shall we say, in the halachic system, but not directly in the halachic side. And this is another model that's possible. Here I give you a Gemara. Right, just to give an example. And the Gemara in Yom Daf Pei Gimel says, Chole, Machin also Al Pi Bikin, right, on Yom Kippur. If someone is sick, we ask the doctors, when does he need to eat? Omer Bianai, Chole, Omer Tzarech, Virofe, Omer Eino Tzarech. If the sick person says he needs to eat, and the doctor says he doesn't, Shomen Lachola, you listen to the sick person, my taima, and why leiv yodea marat nafsho? Because a heart knows its own pain. Pshita, isn't that obvious? Ma'ojit hema rofe kim lei tve kamash malan. I might have thought the doctor knows better. Kamash malan, you actually know how sick you are yourself. What is the role in this case of the posek? What's the role of balabayit? Right. The role of the posek is what?
tell him his options.
It's basically straightforward. It's, right, what is the role of the posek to give the halachic guidelines, right? It's, if the situation is X, you would do Y. If the situation is A, you would do B. But what did the posek not do?
Say what exactly?
He doesn't say if it's X, right, or A, right? He just says, this is what would happen if. But he leaves in the hands of, well, here are two people. The non-halachic expert, right, i.e. the doctor, and even the person himself, right, the role of deciding the reality. Now, often, we hear, right, people have the criticism that poskim overstep their authority because they don't just make decisions about, right, the halachic part of a question, they make a call about reality, right? Which, sometimes poskim have no choice, but sometimes a posek can say, look, I recognize that I might be the expert in the halachic part of the question, but I'm not the expert in the mitzvahs. More controversial, I'm not expert in the sociological reality. Right? This is the criticism you'll hear often, and I don't want to get into whether it's legitimate or not, but you know, you can understand that the criticism, which is, right, if someone was doing X for the wrong intentions, right, example that comes up all the time, if you're doing it because you're feminist, right, it's usher because it's domed a conservative reform, right, or something like that, right? Right, and the critique always is, right, who are you to tell me what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, right? You could say that in theory, but how can you say that I'm actually feeling that, right? Now, the response could always be, well, a posek has to make a decision in reality. But what I'm pointing out, there is a model in which a posek doesn't have to make a decision on the reality. Just one second, right? This, in general, takes up the place of many medical tshuvot. Right? You look through medical literature, right? You read through the Tzitzel Yezer, the Tzitzel Yezer isn't always, you know, posking on reality, right? The doctors turned him, right? He was the posek of Shari Tzedek, now it's Rosh Weiss. Right, so they ask him, if the reality is such and such and such, what's the halacha? And he says, well, if the reality is such and such and such, then this. Right, but there's a dialogue because there's two experts talking to each other. Right, there's the doctor and the posek. The posek recognizes his own limits. Right, so there, even if I thought that in theory, only poskim can decide halachic things, that still wouldn't mean that balabatim, so to speak, don't have a role in halachism. They do, because most questions in life are a shiluv between two things. One is the halacha, and the other is the reality, right, that the halacha relates to, right? So one could come up with a very robust theory of the role of poskim, namely that they're the only ones who have a halachic say, and still say that the balabatim have a very strong reality because a posek can, right, basically act as a guide and say, this is the theoretical psak, but you have to make a call in reality, right? That's another model that is open to poskim. Yeah,
hello. So couldn't this cause a problem in the sense that there are balabatim who can be very, very mistaken about reality, really, in a lot of situations.
It can cause experts. It can cause disasters. Of course it can. That is for sure. In fact, all of these can cause disasters, and all of these can be great. Yes. Right? The point of this is to open the models, right? Because I want you to see, right, the problems and benefits of each model, right? Another example, by the way, if you just want to have fun, right, where this distinction comes up actually very clearly, there's a fun sefer called Toras Nevi'im by the Maariv Chiyus, which is about Akir Starfman HaTorah, Ben Navi, Ben Mel, whatever, and he has a chapter on, I didn't put it there, I referenced it to you, right, because it's a long piece, on She'ilat Eliyahu, right, under what circumstances is it legitimate in the Gemara to say, Eliyahu will resolve it, don't we paskin lo b'shamayim hi? So he says, that's fine. Lo b'shamayim hi means that God no longer has the right to paskin on halacha. That doesn't mean God doesn't paskin on reality, right? If I don't know, right, Munach HaShayavu Eliyahu, what does that mean? Right, I don't know the reality behind the case, so I'll wait for Eliyahu, and then he'll just fill in the reality. Right, and therefore that's not lo b'shamayim hi. Right, but it's the same model. It's the same claim that poskim have the role of making the theoretical halachic call, but reality could be decided by God, could be decided by balabatim. It doesn't matter. Right, that is fundamentally outside the purview of poskim. Okay, a fifth model is. What?
Is this four?
That was four, right? That was four. Right? We have posek poskening, right, blindly, right, just telling you what to do without letting you in the decision. Posek allowing other poskim into his mind but not allowing balabatim. Poskim allowing balabatim actually into the halachic process, right, acting as a guide in halacha, but giving them the final say. Or poskim constructing the theoretical halachic model, but allowing the balabatim or the experts or whoever it might be to determine the reality and therefore how the halakha will actually play out. B'metzius. Number five is where a posek doesn't paskin at all, but he does encourage. Right? He does push, meaning he weighs in on, shall we say, meta halachic values, right? Or not, whatever, not easily paskinable values. I don't know. You'll see what I mean, right? This is an example. I don't think we dealt with this last year, but I dealt with it in an article that I wrote on going to bars that I published last year. So this is the chachmas adam. Chayadam, same person. Right? Sheikhar shel akum. Right? Non-Jewish beer. Bein shel tvua, bein shel ta'inim, bein shel lo shel dvash, shekorim mead. Avo pi de'ein baze isr mishum bishuli. Akum, right? It's not asr mishum bishul akum. Vafil bishul tvua, sherei ein kanela mayim velo tvua. Vaharaya shem varachan alav shahako velo barim mizeno. This is not a problem with bishul akum because the main part of it, halachically at least, is the water, and that's why we make shahako. Vafil achi asr chal mishum chasmus. But still asr to drink it with non-Jews in their store because of chasnas, right? Because of problems of intermarriage. V'omnam, lo asr bazel v'makom michi raso, but it's only asr in the store. Ukshgoveh atzmo, meaning a bar. That's asr. Ukshgoveh atzmo lishtot v'beis ha'akom. Avalam hevi ha'sheikh l'beis, so we bring it home. Oshin nechon l'beis ha'akom, lishtos mishum atzama, oshalon v'beis ha'akom, bortz lishtos. Bein lishloach, liknos v'makom acher, bein shoshose, mishalach sanya, mutter v'af. And even though nowadays people are mekil, because the Rama is mekil, based on the minag of some of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, and you can't actually tell them it's aser, because there are some people who are mekil, right? Namely the Rama. Right? The Rama does in fact seem to say it's mutter to go to a bar unless you're having Sheikhar Tamarim, which I don't. I've never been to a bar, but I don't know whether people go to a bar and have Sheikhar Tamarim. I don't even know what that is. Do we have date beer? Do we know what date beer is? I can theoretically what it is. I don't know whether people drink this. Fine, whatever. So there are people who are mekil. Aval, and now watch what he says, right? I can't tell you it's Usher. I think it's Usher, right? He does think it's Usher, but I can't actually tell you it's absolutely Usher because there are other positions. But it's better for you to distance yourself from it. And then he says, coffee, right? Coffee and hot chocolate, right? Mutter lishos beis akum, that you can drink, right? That's not under sheikhar akum, to the exception of. Of Rabbi Yaakov Emdin. Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, in fact, does think that even coffee is included in the Isser of Sheikhar Akum, and therefore you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to drink in Starbucks. Parenthetically, there is, in fact, an Apostle Paskins this way. Well, actually, Paskins like what I'm about to read, right? So he says, technically, going to a coffee house is not Usser, Midin Sheikhar Akum. Ach, however, Babo Noseinu HaRabim, Bizman Hazeh, but now, kama kilkulim baim mizeh. Look how many bad things happen because people drink in coffee houses. Ufrat lishtos coffee im chalav. And to drink coffee with milk, shuhi isur gomer. Milvach al yidei zeh chas v'shalom ba'i lidei znus. And it leads to promiscuity. Kayaduas is well known.
Drinking your milk with your coffee?
Yes. Drinking in Starbucks with non-Jews. And parenthetically, who paskins this way, though he goes back and forth about it, but who actually is known to Boston this way, though after we convinced him that coffee houses don't look exactly like he thinks they do, Rav Shechter said it's usher to drink in Starbucks, right? We had a little bit of a deal with him when we asked him, well, in most coffee houses, people don't, like, it's not like a bar scene where like everyone's together, like you're at your own table or under drinking your coffee. He's like, oh, then probably mutter, right? But he does, in theory, Boston and Chacham Asadam, what? He thinks it's usher. I mean, he does, right? Based on this Chachmas Adam. Again, you can read my article on it. Go ahead. I record there all my conversations with the Rosh Yeshiva. You don't have to, like, you know, it's in print now. Whatever. Shadi Chaz V'Shom Boli Diz Nus Kayadua Alkein Asher Bo Ruach Torah Yarchik Mizel Ahachnez Levatein Lishtos Eza Mashkashiyah. And therefore, you should avoid it. Now here, right, he's, right, you see a few things. First of all, He's telling you his halachic position, but letting you know there are other positions, and therefore memeila, telling you ein limchot, right? Meaning he's leaving the decision to you. But what's he doing? But he's acting as a spiritual guide, right? He's trying to convince you that his position should be right, and trying to convince you even to do things which are not halachic, right? He's saying it's not that it's actually usur to go to a Starbucks. I just think it's a bad idea. You know, I think it's, you know, it leads to problems. So if you have ruach Torah, you shouldn't do it. But what do you see, right? Another role that a posek can have is, right, he leaves the halachic playing field open, but he doesn't leave it neutral, right? He explains to you and tries to convince you, right, to follow what he thinks is correct. So here's five models, right? And I'm sure we can think of more, but these are the five that came to me, right? Upsak, right? Sometimes poskim, paskin without explaining it at all. They paskin with the, basically the view that I give the decision, you listen, that's it. Sometimes they recognize that, no, the rabbinic establishment, so to speak, paskins for the laity. But within the rabbinic establishment, there's a conversation. Sometimes poskim say, no, I'm actually going to bring the laity in. They have a right to be involved in the halakhic process itself. Sometimes poskim say, well, maybe not in the halachic process, but in the application of halacha to reality, in that gap between the theoretical halacha and red halacha and halacha lemaaseh, right? I have no more qualifications than the balabatim, and especially, like I said, if you take that view on sociological issues, right, that's very far-reaching. You're basically saying that poskim won't make policy decisions, right? Which some people really do think, right? Is the ideal? I don't know whether it is. I don't think it's ideal, but. Kacha, and sometimes poskim, right, not only bring people an halachic decision, but they don't do it neutrally, right, they act as a guide and they do try to push you. They don't force you, they don't tell you you have to, but they tell you the values of a halachic system, right? So these are five different models. And what I want to explore, sort of the rest of the year, is, right, all of these exist. What I want to explore is to what extent each of them exist, and, right, sometimes poskim really do have the right to make a decision, right? Or they just do. Now, sometimes that's because, and that's what, you know, we'll deal with hopefully in 2 weeks, because they're your morad da'asra, and that gives them authority. But what does that mean? What does it mean that your morad da'asra, right? They get their authority by dint of you having accepted them, right? By dint of you living where they are. Over what types of questions do they have authority? Right, even if you accept the notion that I have a posek and I have multiple poskim, which basically gives me a certain level of autonomy, maybe not on the pratim, but right, if I get to pick a series of poskim, right, so I basically shape how my religious life is going to look. Right, you know, the Das Torah questions. Are there things that definitionally just out of the role of psak? And then we'll deal with the question, well, right, sometimes we see here that poskim understand that everybody's part of the halachic process. Well, under what circumstances is that true? Right? When can I make my own decisions? Right? When am I knowledgeable? What does it mean to be knowledgeable enough to paskin? Right? What's the status of my psak? Right? If I ask a shaila, right, is it binding? Why is it binding? Under what circumstances is it binding? Is it only binding for the shaila that I asked? Or once I ask a shaila, I have to follow that position for the rest of my life? Right? And these are all very, very dense sugyas, very hard sugyas. But we're going to try to cover them as much as we can and see what else we come up with. Okay? What I want to close with, and then we'll, if we have a few minutes, we'll discuss what other issues people have. This is an article by Judah and Shana Goldberg. And, you know, if you have, you can read the rest of it. You can either get it from the Orthodox Forum, is the next generation of Jewish leaders in the Jewish community. It's in the library. It's on YU Torah. You can also email Judah and he will send it to you. Whatever, that is how I got it, because the PDF doesn't copy quite as well as the Word, so, you know. So they wrote an article based on Shana's experience as a yuetzet and Judah's insight as a doctor into what he called Balabayit-centered halachic consultation. So he says, much has been discussed and written about the tension between the modern value of personal autonomy and traditional Judaism's emphasis on rabbinic authority. The questions raised typically presuppose one of two familiar scenarios. Either a learned individual who is capable of studying original halachic source material and wants to assert his or her own analysis and decision regarding a particular issue, or an area of Jewish life in which broad social and spiritual considerations seem to overshadow its specifically legal aspect, thus inviting the suggestions that the rabbi's voice may not be distinctive in this domain. Certainly, though, in areas of halacha where the psak seems straightforward and the lay input at best is only slightly informed, the term autonomy is entirely out of place. Indeed, In what respect could a halachic figure possibly accord to fanciful self-determination when his petitioner is being called upon with blinding clarity to surrender to the will of the Almighty? At the same time, each of us, through our respective lines of work, has come to appreciate the power and, in some sense, the legitimacy of recognizing personal autonomy and self-determination, even as we must confront individuals and sometimes choiceless realities. Well, one of us, Shaina, functions as a yuetzet halacha, and teacher of halacha to high school students and to brides, and the other, Judah, as a physician, we have found striking similarities in the challenges we face in helping individuals understand and adjust to always changing and sometimes difficult circumstances. For the most part, whether in the realm of halacha or that of medicine, we are dealing with a hamonam that neither is taking neither proficient about the topics in question, nor has ever actively sought autonomy in decision-making. They may approach our respective services seeking direct and blunt instructions to be able to articulate any need for involvement. Yet, what we have found is that they too very much benefit from feeling a degree of control over their halachic and or medical lives. Sometimes this control is not even an issue of making their own decisions, but just feeling empowered to understand their situations and play an active role in navigating their own circumstances. More than we can ever imagine, they need to be brought into the conversation, and both their halachic observance and their personal health, respectively, flourish when they are. For our purposes, then, we interpret autonomy somewhat differently. So not necessarily giving people the room to make their own decisions, but respecting their personhood and engaging them in the process of decision-making and education, rather than just handing them a succinct directive of what to do next. While the concept of patient-centered medicine has been well described, though not necessarily well practiced, balabayit-centered halachic consultation, by our estimation, has yet to be fully elucidated. Patient-centered care, among other things, believes that the crux of medical consultation should be a conversation rather than an opinion, that the locus of control in the medical context should ultimately lie with the patient, and that genuine autonomy, in contrast to its usual treatment in classical discussions of bioethics, should be interpreted as a capacity to be encouraged and nurtured through ongoing education rather than a political right around which to tiptoe. We believe that many of these principles can help inform and guide halachic consultations as well. Admittedly, the parallel is imperfect for two crucial reasons. First, the dominion of Chai Shah and Chai Olam are wholly incomparable, and one could alternatively point to either the graver consequences or the inherent potential for recovery regarding halachic as opposed to medical recklessness. Second, patient-centered medicine, as exists in the Western world, assumes an absolute autonomy of the patient regarding medical decision-making that halacha could never countenance, not in regard to halachic observance and not even in regard to personal health. While contemporary bioethics champions our patient's right to forego any intervention, the foundations of halachic life is the sweeping surrender of one's will to something greater. A life of Torah is a life of duty with responsibilities to both body and soul, and self-destructive behavior regarding either is no one's prerogative. These limitations aside, we believe that patient-centered medicine still has much to offer regarding attitude, approach, and orientation, even as we avoid its extremes, and that this model can be instructive for the practice of halachic consultation as well. Specifically, we advocate for educating the men and women of our communities, empowering them at every opportunity, bringing them into the halachic process, and making halacha a living and tangible part of their lives rather than just a rule book. And all this even when the bottom line may not have any wiggle room. For our purposes, we will focus on the experience of counseling and teaching women regarding Tara Mishpacha as a model for what Baal HaBayit-centered halachic consultation could mean. And so the challenge basically they put out is very simple. Halacha does not recognize absolute autonomy. But on the other hand, there's no reason that a certain level of limited autonomy, which either means allowing people to actually make their own decisions when they're capable of it, right, which means either actually making the halachic decision or determining the reality and therefore de facto, right, affecting the psak, or at the very least explaining to them what's going on so they don't feel like you're poskening, right, they're blind, right? They feel like they're part of the conversation. They might, right? Sometimes people, right, they want to know what's going on, even if they, right, they don't understand medicine, but they want their doctor to explain what's going on, so they feel like they're part of the process because they have the right to be part of it, right? So the challenge that we want I sort of want to take up for this year is really analyze this, right? Take the halachic topics and as people know from last year, examine them as rigorously as we can. Right, try to actually tease out the halachic perspectives, right, on some of these questions, and really, what is the balance between the role of the posek and the role of the non-posek? To what extent are all of us who are not poskim, do we have the right to poskim in our own lives or affect the decisions either we get or we make? So that's what we're going to try to do. Okay, any questions, suggestions about topics we should do, directions we have to take, any other practical things? Yeah, hello.
Specifically when you have like family with Hagim and when your Hashkafa starts to deviate from the family,
how you, well, like, if, for example, like you end up switching certain kinds of post grammar, how you would be able to do that.
Like, okay, so that we're going to deal with, right? We're going to deal with that in 2 weeks, probably. In 2 weeks, when we deal with the role of Mara D'Asra, right, what we're going to talk about is the original role of Mara D'Asra, and then what we'll get to, Rav Lichtenstein's point, which I'll regal achas, is that in the world of globalization, right, Mara D'Asra, that role of your central halakhic authority, is not defined geographically, it's defined, right, ideologically. You choose it, right, because you could just pick up a phone. That's something you're going to deal with in 2 weeks, and that does throw a real wrench in sort of classic halachic decision-making, where it was locale-based, right? You know, if you were in community, you possibly like the rabbi, because that was his community, and that's just the way it was. The world doesn't work that way, but that's what we're going to deal with that, hopefully, in 2 weeks. But yes, that is, I think, one of the central questions we have to deal with, right? Because even if we recognize you're not a posek, right, people make a decision, right? If your family, you know, like I have a friend, right, his family is very, very, very Haredi. He grew up in Navardik and then decided to leave and become Dati Lumi. He doesn't view himself as a posek, but that decision to change ideological, again, totally shifts the way Psach will, right, his halachic life will look, even if he never makes a halachic decision in his life, right? So yes, that's what we'll talk in 2 weeks, that because, right, that question, the authority of what does it mean to pick a posek, right, or Mar D'Asra, right, even if we thought that no one's allowed to make a halachic decision, right, we have to analyze what it means. How do you pick a posek? Where does that authority come from? Yoni.
How to determine, I guess, whether you're deciding for yourself out of emotion or out of intellect, and it's okay.
So we're going to deal with that. We're going to deal with that with Nogea. When we get to Nogea, right, that's going to be the question. Even if you're qualified to posek, under to Paskin trials, under what circumstances can you not Paskin for yourself? Because you're Paskin for yourself. Right, that's what we're going to deal with. Yes, I'm glad that the questions you have are covered by the topic. That's good. That means I'm on the right track here of what questions need to be asked. Ruven and Chaim, what time is it, by the way? My clock is up.
6.
Like, we have time. Yeah, sure, the two questions, yeah.
Who is Kovei the Mitzvah?
We're going to... I still don't know how I'm going to do that one. I wanted to put it on the sheet as one of the issues, the questions we have to deal with. I don't know how we're going to do this one. But yes, we will get to that. We will touch on probably on what Rabbi Klapper likes calling the scariest Gemara in Tras, right? Which deals with this question, but...
What do you
mean, Kovei? You'll see. I don't know how... I have not figured out how we're going to attack that, but we will have to. It may be that we'll have to use medical shilas as the classic example, which is probably the most, you know, rich literature we have on that, but Nagia, yeah.
This may touch on other things, but more than last day, like, if we're reading Shulchan Aruch or Rambam, what should our, like, sort of approach to that type of learning?
And good, we're going to do that also, and that's going to be the question when we deal with when are you qualified to paskin your own shilas, right? We talked about it a little bit last year, right? The question of authority, under what circumstance can you paskin your own shilas, right? We're going to deal with that. That we actually did deal with last year, so people have to bear with me because we're going to repeat a lot of that material. But we will focus more on some of the things that I touched during Chagah. But yeah, that is, you know, the issues that come from Simon Reish Membet and Yardea. Good. I'm glad that all the questions so far that you'll have are exactly the questions I had when I was trying to think what this would look like. But we will play it a little bit by ear, okay? Shkoya.